Welcome back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things competitive in the world of Warhammer 40,000. My name is Eric. With me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
And we are back with lots of news regarding more suspension and stoppage of work regarding Games Workshop. Their Bunker Down announcement from a few weeks ago has been extended. Ray, you saw a couple more details on this.
Yeah, so they've moved their date of reopening from the 14th of April, which would have been this next Monday, to an undetermined amount of time, an undetermined date. I've seen the word indefinite spread around by certain people and organizations. I really think that's the wrong word because that tends to, you know, mean forever, but that's not the case. So.
Yeah, indefinite's pretty scary. You know, it doesn't, obviously they can't be forever, but how long will it be? No one's really answering at this point, and it's kind of out of Games Workshop's hands at this point. But there's quite a bit of aftershocks that we're going to talk about here that not only affect the hobby as a whole, but also the competitive scene, which is the focus of the podcast. So we have essentially three Psychic Awakenings projects in the can that we're waiting to come out. So the first one, Engine War, which we were expecting to see some more previews of. We've gotten a few stories and a revisiting of the models that were shown off at LVO. But as far as that concerned, not a whole lot new knowledge at this point.
No. And to be honest, I probably would have expected them to start showing more of it this week or possibly next week, just because... I mean, this would have been the second real week of the Saga of the Beast being out. So, I mean, if things were still going the way they had been, we'd still be talking about that and how it's affecting the meta at this point.
Partially, I would agree.
People have it.
Yeah, I would agree with you there. I think though, from a Games Workshop standpoint, for us Americans, it's a little different. But Easter's a huge holiday in Europe, so there's a lot of people that would normally be taking, like, even without everything going on right now, easily seeing people being out of work from Wednesday to Friday with vacations and stuff like that. So it's one reason why they don't have a preview this weekend and resuming a preview this coming weekend. So no surprise there. I think it's just, you know, there's probably... under normal circumstances, nobody was going to be working. That being said, I think two short stories, which were quite interesting, and the one involving the infighting among the Adeptus Mechanicus, and apparently they have discovered another new weapon, and then the other one involving that the Adeptus Astartes apparently are not immune to the taint of chaos, and they found out the hard way. By having to kill one of their own to keep the secret. So very interesting storylines. Curious to see how that plays out in the future.
Yep. In the meantime, you know, we've also seen all this stuff for Pariah. They mentioned last week some of the stuff about it, and there was a lot of conjecture about how, oh, this is the last one and it's gonna be Harlequins and Sisters and Death Watch. I've seen some people in the Necron community just be kind of, well, why are you leaving us out of it? Well, I mean, we don't know that's what's going on, because they announced a few days ago that Death Watch and Harlequins aren't actually going to be in the book. They're going to be in their own White Dwarf article. So don't be looking for them in Pariah. You need to purchase the White Dwarf.
So they did preview Death Watch in terms of what we'll be getting from there. Supposedly slated as of this point for a May 2nd available for download. Not sure when the hard copy will be available of that White Dwarf. But you get all the Phobos treatments that all the other Space Marine codices have received at this point, and a lot of the newer stratagems that we've been seeing from the newer Space Marine stuff. I hadn't seen anything unique to Death Watch in terms of new stuff. I think everything was just kind of a rehash. You know, the usual, you know, chaplain litanies have been upgraded. All the Phobos stuff is in there. All the new stratagems. But more to see. Hopefully we'll see as more comes out. And the assumption, let's say it's a rumor, the assumption would be then that the Harlequins would come out for the June White Dwarf. And from that, we've heard absolutely nothing in terms of what could be in that book.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy that we now know more about what we're going to see for the Death Watch than we will for anything in Engine
War. Which we were just talking about prior to the show, was this, you know, Death Guard, I can say that right, Death Guard is coming out. And it's supposed to have the Death Companies, which are similar to the Covens of a Thousand Suns. So, Plague Companies, thank you. So I'm assuming it's going to be similar to the Covens that the Thousand Suns had and providing all those extra abilities, which is like, oh gosh, that's last thing Death Guard needed at this point. But the return of one of the, you know, more of the swing towards more resilient armies, and this is one of the most resilient armies in the game already. Be curious to see how all that comes into play. But yeah, as you said, we know more about these guys than anything in Engine War. Still no stats, still no hints of rules or any changes at this point. So curious to see what comes out. Maybe we'll see something more this following Saturday. And then over on Spiky Bits, they put a pretty good conspiracy theory together, which is gaining a little bit of traction, which is always fun to listen to, regarding Pariah. So Pariah would be the book after Engine War. And the thought process was, are they bringing back the Pariahs from the Necrons? So other people say, no, it's that two-sword-wielding Harlequin that they showed off last weekend. He's known as the Pariah, and that's the whole story. So I can't imagine they're going to base a whole book based off of just one obscure character. I think if you go back to the greater good, it wasn't just about the Taos, you know, three religious beliefs thinking they were stronger than the other. It was an interesting play on words. So the thought process is Pariah, once again, will have multiple meanings in this book. So the conspiracy theory via Spiky Bits one more time is that you'll be getting a plastic Illuminor Zaris, who is known to be the Necron version of Fabius Bile. And he, too, has been tinkering with various different creatures of the Imperium. And in the recent rumor engine, which is those previews you see on Games Workshop's community site, would take an extreme close-up of a miniature and tell you that this is a new model coming out, and you go, what heck am I looking at? Well, one of the pictures they showed was a rare circle sticking out of the back of looks like some sort of fleshy monster. And it looks very similar to the necrotite crown. I hope I'm not pronouncing that right. But anyway, the idea is that there, if you look through the end of the 5th edition codex and the current codex for the Necrons, that the Technorites, I think they were called, they are basically the Cryptex that the Silent King felt got too strong and beat them back, that they were on the rise among the Necrons, and they have developed a way to take Blackstone material and insert it into humans along with living metal to create a new blank. So it's not quite the Pariah that we're used to from the old Necron Codex, but it still has that psychic null idea still coming through. Again, a lot of conjecture, a lot of fan-based theory, but it's real fun to listen and read to. So, we'll be waiting for bated breath what we can find from the Pariah book. And then the last bit of news, we did a little bit of research prior to the show. So Death Watch and Harlequins in White Dwarf. Why? And a couple people have bombarded the Games Workshop Facebook site. Can you explain why the decision? Was it a coronavirus thing? Did you guys just forget about them? What happened? And the team's not responding to anything. Simply said that they'll be receiving the White Dwarf treatment in its entirety. So there's a feeling that something was written, and this is not an abridged version. This isn't a stopgap, that whatever was going to come out in a Psychic Awakenings book will be coming out in White Dwarf, but at least unaltered and unabridged at this particular point. So that'd be good to see, but exactly what the reasoning was. Was it the factories in China were closed for too long? Were the printing presses unable to reach a deadline? And me being an old school gamer, they used to guys be happy with 3 codices in a year. Why such a tight deadline all of a sudden? You have something else coming out later in the year? So that you need to have all the Psychic Awakenings book out this quickly? I don't know. But to me, it's all a good thing. I'd rather get the book sooner than later. So if I can get them in the White Dwarf faster than waiting till July or August for a Psychic Awakens book, good for me.
Yeah.
Especially because I've been toying with the idea. Yeah.
This, you know, any of the stuff that's been in any of the Psychic Awakening books for any one faction, it could easily be stuck into a White Dwarf. There's when you go past the storyline that's in the books, there's really not that many pages committed to any one faction. So they could be in a White Dwarf and you wouldn't lose anything. So you don't have to worry just because you're not getting, you know, a hardbound book that you're not going to get some. It's just, if you want to get it out faster, you can put multiple into a book. And that's what we've been getting plus story. So instead of us getting all the factions over the course of a couple of years, they've been able to put them all into a span of about 6 months. It just so happens that there's been a bump along the way.
Yeah. So it's a bump along the way. Nice to see this material come out. So hopefully we'll get a little more details over the next few weeks. Like I said, we've got 3 books pretty much in the pipeline waiting for release. So it'd be kind of nice, because the one area that we are a little concerned about from a competitive standpoint is normally this is the time of year we'd be getting the spring update, you know, the spring FAQ, the rules updates and all that. And usually that is a reaction to what the Games Workshop development team sees at Adepticon. Well, there was no Adepticon. So, matter of fact, there hasn't been a whole lot of games in general. So, if you think about it, Adepticon alone is, you know, 6-round event, 800 players, 400 games. That's 2,400 games that they could have pulled data from. All went up in smoke almost overnight. Especially because the later rounds, the game, you know, Adepticon adds a lot more. So question then becomes, without that data, does Games Workshop even make any changes at this point, or they let the meta lie and see what if the Space Marine nerfs that came out shortly after LVO are good enough until more data comes in?
Honestly, I think at the most we might see a rollback of changes that they decided were a little much. But that might be or maybe just a slight tightening down on stuff that they've already decided that what they determined wasn't far enough. That'll probably be all we see.
Might be. Any come to mind that you would like to see?
I honestly couldn't say. I mean, the biggest things have been the Space Marine stuff, but realistically, right, at least from what I've heard from people who pay attention to it, the only thing we're really seeing is when it comes to who's best, it's just shifted a little bit.
Yep. Probably the only 2 changes I like to see, I can think of off the top of my head, is kind of a hot take, is the Space Marine Apothecary. It, you know, gives every Space Marine a 6-up in Feel No Pain. That works out great. It unfortunately gives Iron Hands a 5-up Feel No Pain. I'd rather see it toned down to maybe they get the reroll ones or something like that. But if the Space Marine, the Iron Hands blob of, you know, 3-up armor, 2 wounds, toughness 4 with a 5-up Feel No Pain is just very difficult to shift, and it's like a plague. It's like a plague bearer list on steroids. It's really hard to deal with. So especially now, I can just switch out their bolt rifles to something that suits more the tactical doctrine, so you don't have to rely on Devastator doctrine. They're just as nasty as they were before, with a hell of a lot more resiliency. The other change is Gene Steel Occults need a little bit of help. Probably the biggest thing was their aberrants were kind of nerfed, and that threat's kind of gone away. So kind of restoring them back to their original point values probably would make a big difference there too. But I wouldn't want to see any changes to their core mechanics. So those are the only things I can really think of. I think the last thing is, whoever wrote the Cabal rules and Psychic Awakenings to make your own Cabal rules, I probably needed to get reminded that there are no Cabal assault units. So love to see a couple tweaks here and there, but I don't think we're going to see that. So that's just my bitterness at this point. I was rereading them at work the other day. I was just like, I had this great idea. And I read through it again. It says, melee weapons only. Oh, yeah. Oof. That stinks. Never mind. So, yeah, there was like, of all these, there's like 3 out of the 8 that are for melee units. I'm like, who are the melee units in the Cabal? They're not.
Yeah, the only thing I could think of is whatever. I don't remember what the name is, but basically the sergeant of the Cabal warrior units, because they can have one.
Oh, the Ark. Yeah, but it's by unit. The only thing I think of is like the Archon. So you take like a Supreme Command detachment, and you have like three Archons running around with husk blades. Just go, Oh, look at all the. I can fall back in charge, free of cost. Yay! Got rerolls of ones. It's like, this is weird. So I don't know. Maybe something new was supposed to come out and never did. I'm confused. I don't know. But anyway, so yeah, be curious to see what comes out from there. But yeah, it's the meta really, in one respect, it's kind of in this hiatus, null zone. What did you call it earlier?
Limbo.
Limbo, yes. So in one respect, it's kind of in this limbo phase. The other thing is, maybe this is the off season we needed. Maybe this is the time to take a step back and kind of reassess everything and take a breath and figure out what really does, make long lasting changes as opposed to little tweaks that are a little too far. But I think the hardest part, though, is there's a lot of books that have come out since the LVO deadline that have not seen the light of day simply because there hasn't been any tournaments to play them in. So there's a lot of knowledge that's probably sequestered within small game groups that have had chances to practice. I know our local area, a couple of guys were trying out the new Grey Knights Codex. It's with Psychic Awakenings, it's pretty nasty. But, we fully, other than Lawrence Baker going undefeated right before the COVID-19 attack there, we're not going to haven't seen a whole lot of players do well in large events. So, because there hasn't been any large events. So we'll see. I don't know. Lots more to think about when it comes to the overall what's going to happen next. So that is pretty much all your news for this particular week. Obviously, there were no tournaments last week throughout the ITC. So kind of looking ahead, we'll take a quick break and get back to our overall discussions right after this.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
Does your game day fare leave your fingers orange or your game table pizza stained? There is a better option. You need the Necronom Nom Nom. Yes, that's right. The cosmic horror and great cuisine become allies of convenience with this darkly humorous, gorgeously illustrated, and simple-to-use guide to insanely good food. 50 recipes arm you with breakfast, lunch, and dinner from drinks to dessert and use unique grimoire of forbidden recipes. Don't tell the Inquisition, but you can tell your friends to find it on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Brought to you by the madmen of Red Duke Games, take the pizza shop off speed dial and treat your players to something new and delicious from the Necronom Nom Nom.
Welcome back after the break. This week we thought we'd dive a little deeper into one of the upcoming factions that will be appearing in Edge of War. We're going to talk a little bit about Death Guard this evening. So kind of look at kind of a macro approach into how to run Death Guard and the current meta going on at this particular point. So one thing we're not seeing a whole lot of is Mortarion, their Primarch, which is a gorgeous model, but it just seems to not be frequently above, but back on the table. But there are still quite a few assets within the Codex that are still quite powerful, and we'll be curious to see what Psychic Awakenings will add to this at this point. So, Bray, how would you originally describe Death Guard in terms of a play style at this point?
Slow. I would also call them durable.
Oh. We talked about earlier. They're the original durability kings. Just tons of feel no pains. So they're making saves. Decent armor, high toughness, and a lot of abilities on top of that. But which is, ironically, had Adepticon continued, the Adepticon missions definitely favor durability over firepower. You probably would have seen quite a few Death Guard at Adepticon simply because of the board control that they can maintain from their durability.
Yeah. So with there not really being any tournaments, thought we'd this would be a good time to just kind of talk about Death Guarder's affection in this case. So, Eric, in your opinion, which would you say would be the worst deployments for a Death Guard player if they're going mono faction?
Probably worst deployments. Oh, I'm trying to think. I mean, their goal is to be, you know, just punch forward a little bit and get board control because of their durability. They want to be at board center as quickly as possible. And they actually can benefit from going first a little bit. They don't get killed by going second either because they can absorb a lot of Alpha Strike at this point. But the idea is you can actually screen out a lot of Alpha Strikes by going first. So I'm trying to think. Vanguard is pretty good. It's just a Pointy Dawn of War. It's maybe Pointy Dawn of War simply because you end up funneling too many of your units. But because you know the corners, you only have 6 inches, you know, where, but it gets you closer to that 18 inches up front. So that's probably, I don't know, kind of contradicted myself there. I have to think about that. I'll go with just the typical hammer and anvil. Probably is the one for them. It's just you're kind of far back. You got a lot more real estate you need to cover, and like you said, they're slow. With the exception of Mortarian and the bloat drones, everything is pretty much a 5 or 6 inch movement, I think is what you told me. So you're forced to advance.
In a lot of cases.
Yeah. So not a lot of moving and shooting, so which can get can bog you down. So you're forced to advance on turn one. So yeah, I'll go with hammer, the anvil. It's probably the 24 inches apart.
Yeah. And when it comes to the slow units, there are ways to make them go faster if you go for something like a rhino for a unit. That being said, we don't really see a lot of trains. A lot of rhinos, they're not necessarily that durable, so people tend to just forego them, thus slowing down the army. I actually can definitely see the point of what you said though with the pointed Dawn of War. That's not something I had really considered. Something like that can really make someone put all of their units closer together if they really want to try to get stuff down the board.
Yeah, I mean, the good news is at the apex of that, you're only 18 inches apart, so you're closer together, and it does force you to clump up, which necessarily is a bad thing for Death Guard, and then you can just kind of get to the center point and play the four corners game of getting recon on somebody, and so that may not be as bad as I thought it was. I just know deploying those corners gets really annoying, but I don't know if really Death Guard really need to do that at this point. So again, kind of off the top of my head here, but I think a lot of people think, you know, you didn't see a lot of Death Guard at LVO simply because everything was kind of focused on the Iron Hands meta and this hyper offensive strike on turn one. Imperial Fists are kind of in that same boat. Now, with the nerf, they're not in tactical or Devastator Doctrine. For you only have to survive one turn of Devastator Doctrine as opposed to 6 turns of it. So you can probably just slough off that turn one bombardment and then play the game. I think also you're going to see a lot more of these resiliency units. So now it's kind of resilience on resilience. And Death Guard are still the kings of resilience at this point. And I still think, I ran into a Death Guard, Nurgle player on my third game, and it was such a curveball at that point. And how to manage that after playing Iron Hands after Iron Hands, it was a very different list, and mentally I was just not prepared for it. Could also have been the 4-hour delay to the software, but I'm not making excuses. I just wasn't ready for it. And also starting the game at 10:30, that was definitely played a factor. But the key with those demon lists is all the firepower comes from 2 or 3 demon princes and a allied in Ahriman. You know, Death Guard do have a fair amount of tools in their own arsenal. A lot of the Plague Burst crawlers are still nasty because they got the ignore line of sight mortars on the back, and so they have quite a bit of that, so they can go toe-to-toe with any Thunderfire cannon pretty easily. So trying to remember how, you know, their character suite off the top of my head, I know they have a couple, but I don't remember being the hypercritical. I think with the only exception, maybe Epidemius, as you get the kill count higher and higher. So the trick with that, though, is that you got to keep consistently getting the kills. And I think in the current meta, when you're seeing a little more resilient armies, you're going to be battling more for hold more instead of kill more. So as long as you get one or two kills, you know, you kind of stay in the game to get your one kill. But I know even Don took that hit, his Epidemius out of his list in later versions simply because it wasn't quite there. But on the flip side, if you went with some of the more shootier Forge World Dreadnoughts, you could also make up for that firepower as well. So it's another option you can go from there. But so the other key change is the changes in the ITC secondaries are definitely, you know, worlds apart at this point. We mentioned Recon. You mentioned, so it's a pretty easy get for them. Some of the, you know, Reaper, good luck trying to kill two units. There's a couple units in that Death Guard army that you're just, like I mentioned, the Plague Burst Crawlers, large blobs of Plague Bearers, even Plague Marines are still, you know, hard to kill. They're kind of the original Intercessor Marines, and when it comes to durability. So, you know, getting Reaper on them is pretty unlikely. They're a high cost army, so low model count. So, Butcher's Bill, I was referring to either not Reaper, but Reaper, you know, in terms of, you know, number of wounds per game, you're not going to get that pretty high. So they're pretty immune to a lot of the killing secondaries. I think the key thing is they're probably not going to get behind enemy lines because they're slow speed. And but they'll easily get recon. They'll easily get block you out of getting recon on your own, and also blocking out behind enemy lines. Wonder if they go second, they could take advantage of sappers. That might be an interesting thing. Nothing's worse than like a Plague Burst Crawler or a large blob of Durgle Marines dropping down on a objective that's, you know, like, okay, we're just going to turn it off on you. But I have to reread that secondary, the whole idea that you can't attack at all during the turn to get that point. I don't know if that's really in your best interest.
Yeah, I don't think the only time I would see someone playing Death Guard using doing sappers, it would be probably something that doesn't really have range to it. It'd be something that they just kind of use to get up there. It might be something durable, but
yeah, like Nurglings, you know, that's actually a good one.
Yeah. But if they're just straight up going with Death Guard, they might go something like the Tallyman. He's only got a 12-inch weapon, ranged weapon. But he's still got that disgustingly resilient. If he ends up getting stuck in combat, you know, he can reroll failed hit rolls, and I mean, he could be useful on the field anyway. As long as he's on the field, anytime you use command points, there's that possibility of getting that point back. It's really hard because you have to get a specific number, which is 7. But I mean, there's that, or you know, someone might go a slightly different route and pick maybe one of the Terminator units. Again, to a point that the Blight Lord Terminators have some range to them, but when it gets down to it, what they're really going to be is hard to kill, because we're talking about something that's 2+, 4+ invuln save, and it has that disgustingly resilient rule to it.
Right. I also forget they didn't. They could also get some good engineer units, you know, put them in the back, start soaking up extra points there. So imagine getting recon and engineers on top of that. So that's, you can get a lot of points real quickly. So,
yeah. Honestly, I think one of the maneuver secondaries I would expect to see a lot of for a pure Death Guard might be King of the Hill.
Let's see how they change at the end.
So this is something that
at the end of the turn, players
1 point if they have two units.
Yeah. Yeah, if they get 4 units within the center, then they would get 2 points. That's not a bad. You could probably, it's very similar to how you would achieve recon. You're not going to spread out to the 4 corners. You're just going to go to the middle and then kind of spread out 1 in each. But it's easier to get the 2 points off of that than getting two units in every quarter is like be a little hard. So because of the model count.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. You can, I mean, in theory, you could, if you do it right, be getting 2 points a turn off King of the Hill and be getting the recon points too.
Yeah, because you either both of those you don't start collecting till turn two, so you can claim the 2 points for one, and then on turn two and turn three, and then turn four and five, claim the other two. That could, you know, all of a sudden you start maxing those out pretty quick, and
you have 3 points if you do it. If granted, we're talking about a slow army. If you're able to do it, if you're able to get in the right spots, you got 2 points at the end of turn one, 6 points in secondaries at the end of turn two. So turn three, you'd be maxed out for those. I mean, a lot of games.
Yeah, I'm just trying to see if you can. Yeah, I'm just double checking to see if you can collect recon and engineers with this or King of the Hill with the same models. I think. Just double check.
There's nothing that says you can't.
Yeah, I guess not. So. All right. So, yeah, if you can hold both, you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah. I mean, I think if I were to do it. So, for me, a list would be something along the lines of I'd probably pick a lot of units that have that disgustingly resilient. So, I'd probably go with some. So, talking Plague Marines. I don't know what I go for, like, for an HQ. I'd probably have some Poxwalkers. That would probably be the only way that people would get anything close to Reaper against a list for me like that. Just for some objective holding.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'd probably go with the, what's it called? I'd probably have a unit or two of the Blightlord Terminators, because that flail of corruption when it gets into combat can be deadly. And again, this would be something that, those would be something in turn two I'd drop in the middle just to help out with, you know, King of the Hill. Then I'd probably go a little bit.
Yeah, that'd be your main hammer unit.
Yeah. The bloat drone I would probably have for some maneuverability. It's got disgustingly resilient. It's got a 5+ invuln. And if you're going up against, Space Marines, as I found out, that flesh mower can be brutal.
I've not played against this, so what is involved in that thing?
Okay, so I talked about it the other week from my tournament experience. The flesh mower itself is a strength +2, AP -2, damage 2 weapon. Each time a bloat drone fights, it can make 6 additional attacks with this weapon on something that's already... So when a bloat drone is full health, it's got 3 attacks. So that's up to 9. So, you know, if we're talking about going up against a unit of Primaris Marines, you can take out most of a unit pretty quick, because their 3+ saves have become 5+ saves, and everyone that fails pops some Primaris Marine. And we're talking about strength. Strength 8 max had its weakest at strength 6. So it's either 2s or 3s.
Interesting. Yeah, I still.
I think the real trick.
Go ahead. Yeah, I was saying the Blightlord Terminators, I think, might be the better route, just because they're, you know, the deep strike ability, because we talked about the lack of speed they can get downfield, especially get looking at some of the bonuses for some of the ITC missions where hold the center and an opposing objective pops up quite a bit. So holding the center isn't hard for Death Guard, it's just getting downfield might be so. And shifting right. That many Terminators who can shoot, I believe they can shoot twice. I have to look at theirs. So I think that might be a Slaanesh only type thing. But either way, veterans of the Long War, they do fine. So
yeah, I think the tricky point for picking out the secondaries for Death Guard could be the Seek and Destroy secondaries, the ones that involve killing. And in that case, it'd just be looking at what your opponent's bringing. It may be that you decide you want to, you know, you want to go for something that's got, you know, maybe they've got a lot of vehicles or monsters, and you want big, in which case, big game hunter. You got plague weapons, you're good. Maybe it's Space Marines. You can go for the Reaper. Something like the bloat drone, I'll help you get Reaper points real quick. So that's kind of the neat thing about the way that they've got this set up now. You have to pick some of one and some of another. And the maneuver secondaries you can really fit to the army that you build. You know, not just what, you know, what you want to do, but your codex can help you kind of pick which ones you'll be best at.
Yeah, you're probably right. So keep it from there. Okay. I could see that. But I think you're kind of stuck to this shambling horde that moves forward and just kind of takes up space.
Yeah. So the scenarios that the ones that you're going to go on to go with will be, it might be hard to get the bonus points depending. So, but if in that case, it'll really have to do with how well you place your units and how well you move them around, because they can do well. There's the three scenarios that have the objectives that are in a given spot. You can plan out very well where you're going to want to be, and in almost any case, no matter which deployment you get, it won't be impossible for you to be able to at least get one or two objectives before you even start the game. And in some cases, you might even be able to get three. So it'll all come down to being smart about how you place out your army when you're putting them on the table.
I think that would work, yeah. So, like I said, they are the kings of durability in the game. The meta is definitely shifting back towards durability over firepower. And I think also, as you see many of the Marine players dropping their Stalker bolt rifles for, you know, more weapons that benefit from the tactical doctrine, suddenly some of those tougher units that are prevalent in Death Guard units are going to have a lot more durability, just simply because they're not being shot at by a lot of those damage to weapons. So I think it would work out quite well. Just kind of grind them down slowly. All right. Any other thoughts on Death Guard for this evening?
I think I covered everything I wanted to. If anybody has anything that they'd want to add in, though, feel free to message us on our Facebook page, and we can easily bring it up in a future episode. Maybe we missed something.
Sounds good. And it's great to hear from all of you, so definitely let us know if we have missed anything at this point. We'll be covering other armies moving forward as we kind of look through where the meta is at this point, as we're kind of in this holding pattern. And I look forward to all that in future episodes. Any particular factions you wanted us to touch on first, let us know at our Facebook page. And we'll get to those that bring them to the top of the list without it being a White Dwarf download. Okay, see what I did there? All right. So once again, I appreciate all your listeners. And stay safe out there. Maintain your social distancing. In the meantime, my name's Eric.
I'm Raymond.
And thank you for listening to the Exterminatus podcast.